From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a bridge over the Genesee River and in Durand Eastman Park near the ruins of an old castle and in the halls of Rush Reese Library. These are all places supposedly haunted by local ghosts, regional historical figures, or folklore legends who met their demises and haven't left just yet. Why are they here? Do they have nothing better to do than to bother me when we're out for a hike? We're going to get a little spooky this hour and share some local ghost stories. It's that time of year. And we're going to talk about what draws us to folklore and spiritualism. We'll talk about why certain cultures have similar stories. And last year when we did this, I promised this would be an annual tradition because we had so much fun. And so here we are. And it is that time of year for Miriam Zinter, who's a storyteller and an actor. And as full disclosure, you've done work for WXXI. Are you still on the advisory board here?
I still am. I didn't even know this.
That's not why you're invited. I should probably kick you out of here for that, but you can stay. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And she's a true believer, aren't you, Miriam?
Absolutely.
Okay. Penny Sterling, a storyteller, video professional, retired competition chili cook. Is that the spookiest part?
Well, the spookiest part, of course, is me being transgender, because that makes many people very uncomfortable. So, but those are all true things. I used to be a competition chili cook, but I got out of the bed. Like, this is really early in competition chili cooking, and I did a bunch of them, and I was having fun. And then I went to one, and I was there with, like, my mom's electric skillet, a card table, and a crock pot. And then these trailers are pulling up, and they're opening up to full kitchens. And I'm like, okay, this has just gotten out of my league. I'm getting out of this because there's no way I could compete.
Ramped up.
Yeah, it's like I don't have the money for this, so I'm stepping out.
Well, nice to have Penny back here. Nice to have Hannah Davis back here, founding director of Flower City Folk and professor of practice in RIT School of Individualized Study. What are you focusing most of your work on these days, Hannah?
Lots of time spent on the inner loop redevelopment. Lots of oral history collections.
Isn't that interesting?
It is quite interesting. It's not at all related to ghost stories, but the connector is stories. I did just confirm that we will be doing a collection of ghost stories during the upcoming GCVM Halloween event, which is very exciting. So we are shifting into spooky mode.
on the subject, by the way, of collecting, for example, when we talk about inner loop redevelopment, these kind of stories, what is the approach of someone who is interested in some of the maybe less published or less written down and transcribed histories, but still nonetheless very, very important? How do you go about collecting those?
Carefully and with great empathy. I was describing down in the lobby, people's opinions are obviously all over the place. So this is often kind of a touchy subject. We talked about, kind of families' homes being torn down, which is tragic and traumatic and a horrible experience for lots of people. But there are also lots of people who are completely, kind of blasé about it. Like, oh, it's great. I can get to my mom's house in 13 minutes. So emotions are all over the place. And my job is to listen carefully and engage with all of them. In some cases, none of them, depending on the situation. Carefully is the answer, and with empathy. But it's been a really fun experience. I'm really honored to be included in that work.
Well, it's nice to have Hannah back here. And let me just start by saying, Miriam Zinter, ghosts really aren't real though, right?
Well, I've had my experiences with ghosts. I used to live at 275 South Plymouth Avenue in Cornhill, a building called the Wilmot. The people who built it invented Western Union, and it was a place where seances were held by the Fox sisters there for the family. And when I lived in the basement apartment, I did have quite a creepy experience one night.
What happened?
Well, the parking lot for the building is in the back, and I had the basement apartment in the front of the building. And the quickest way to go inside was to go down through the basement of the building and then walk the length of this very large mansion to get to my back door. And there was a lock on the door, and that led to a storage area, which used to be the wine cellar. And then I would walk through that area to my apartment back door, which I would unlock and then get in. And there were lights. But one night, there weren't lights. When I turned the switch, the lights didn't come on. But it was a trip that I had made for 2 years. So I thought, well, I'll just walk through the dark basement. And it was before cell phones, so I didn't even have my little cell phone flashlight or anything. So I just walked and could hear my feet clicking. And as I got closer and closer to the storage door, I heard what sounded like I had left my television on. It sounded like there was a large group of people. They were laughing. They were talking. There was music. And I thought, oh, I left my TV on, or my cat turned the television on.
Why couldn't it have been in a different apartment?
What? There was no other apartment in the basement.
It's just in the basement.
Yeah. And I was the only apartment. And so I put my key in the lock, and I turned it, and I opened the door, and it was silent. There was no television on. There was no party going on. There was no radio on. It was just silent. And it was almost as if I had disturbed a party going on. I could smell flowers in the air, which was very unusual because it was my back storage area. It smelled almost like there had been beeswax candles burning, but there was nothing there. And so I often had thought about that, and I just wondered if maybe that evening there was a party going on, but the people were really on a different plane.
But you were the buzzkill that stopped it.
I was the party pooper. Every party has a pooper.
Ghostbuster. So for you, though, it's not that, it doesn't sound like you were scared. Were you spooked, or what was it?
No, I thought it was my television or radio or something, but when it all stopped.
Yeah, did that spook you?
Yeah, I was creeped out.
Okay. But I mean, it also doesn't sound like you have this vision that these spirits were behaving in a way that was threatening to you.
No, not at all. And I didn't move. The rent was cheap.
In a moment, I'll tell you about some events coming up that you'll want to know about that Penny and Miriam are putting together. But just briefly, you know what this calls to mind for me? As sometimes happens, there's a British show, and then in the United States, we make the show, but we do it way worse. So in the last year, I watched the CBS version of the show Ghosts, and I couldn't watch it. I thought it was terrible. And no offense to anybody who likes it. I'm sure maybe it gets better. But I was told by a friend, you got to watch the British version. And to me, it was one of the best three seasons of any show I've ever seen. It was just phenomenal. The concept is this old British estate, and this couple inherits it, and they head out there, and it's huge, and it's kind of unwieldy, and it's going to be a lot of work. And it turns out that there are ghosts on the property. Anybody who's died on the property and hasn't moved on is there. So there's a guy with an arrow through his neck. There's an old Elizabethan poet. There's a British general from World War II. And it's an interesting mix. And it's kind of goofy and silly, but it becomes quite poignant at times. And the woman and it's a straight couple, and the woman falls and she hits her head, and all of a sudden she can engage with the ghost. Nobody else can. So she was like you coming home, and you hear this party, except for she could see it. Nobody else could. You imagine how difficult that would be, Miriam, if you actually did see them, and then you're trying to convince me that there's a party going on? That'd be a hard spot for you.
That would be. I think that I would probably check myself into a mental hospital at that point.
I mean, not to make light of it, but boy,
no,
I mean, that would
because
actually
you would wonder if
you
were
actually right. If you actually could engage, that would be a hard thing. Anyway, I like the British version of Ghosts. Not a big fan of the American version. Somebody can change my mind. And I want to tell you about an event that's coming up here from October 12th through the 15th at the Muck, right?
That's yep, 142 Atlantic Avenue.
So this is by Miriam Zinter, directed by Penny Sterling. Can you tell us what's coming up here? Penny, Miriam?
Well, it is a collection of Rochester and I guess Monroe County based ghost stories that have haunted this area for a couple of generations now. And Miriam plays. May I tell them that you play one of the Fox sisters?
Absolutely, Kate Fox,
the youngest of the Fox sisters. Yes, and she comes out and she tells us spooky stories about the area.
Mm-hmm. And is this a one-person play?
It
yes.
is a one-woman show. That's correct.
It's a one-woman show. Tickets are $10 in advance, $12 at the door. Again, it's October 12th through the 15th, 7:30 p.m. each night at the Muck. That's the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center on Atlantic. It's a really cool space. Should be a lot of fun. What are you most looking forward to, Miriam?
most looking forward to getting it over with. I'm a little scared. I'm just glad to have Penny by my side. She's done this kind of thing before. She's an excellent producer. This is just one of the things that I've always kind of wanted to do on my bucket list. And I thought when I had three glasses of wine instead of two, why not? Just why not? So it could suck, you know. I mean, I hope people come.
This is a really good endorsement.
But keep your expectations low.
You've got a great director.
She's fabulous, but I might be asking, you know, like the audience to turn the smoke machine on and off. We don't know. You know,
I can help. I'll be there.
Thank you.
Don't worry.
We appreciate it. We've got great stories. We're doing the run throughs. It should be really interesting, but you know, it's my first attempt at a one woman show.
Why do you think, Penny, people are, first of all, they're not going to think it sucked, because you know why? Because people love ghost stories. But why now? We were talking before the program. Like, it's almost like we hit September 21st, summer is over, and boom, we are into, well, we've been in pumpkin spice lattes for a month because somebody has got to talk to the Starbucks of the world. That cannot stand.
I agree with you on that. And yeah, it's because of the seasonal change. Every seasonal change has something that goes along with it. When we get from winter to spring, we're looking at birth. And then when we get from summer to fall, we're looking at that line between life and death. I mean, in wintertime, we have the rebirth, but this is the death part. This is the scary part. This is when everything's dying. The leaves are getting rustling, and you're walking along at night, and you hear the leaves, and you see shapes, and you start telling yourself that you're not alone. And so it just naturally, historically, culturally, we have had this area be the point where, you know, I don't think it's not a coincidence at all. Saints Day starts is November 1st, is because that All Hallows Eve, then the spirits come out. There's historically, and in lots of cultures, this is the point where the line between life and death is always the most blurred, that door is more easily traversed.
And you don't really believe in ghosts, do you, Penn?
Well, I currently live in Swilburg in a house that is nearly 200 years old, and my children have all moved out. And from the very first day, I would wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and I'd hear conversations. And so just like Miriam, and you know, like I got rid of them by asking them to help out with the mortgage, and that got rid of them. But I actually have a ghost story. It's not a Rochester ghost story that actually physically happened to me. In 2011, I decided my weird, stupid thing that I decided to do is that I decided to ride my bicycle up Mount Washington in New Hampshire, which is, if you've ever driven, this car has driven Mount Washington, you see those bumper stickers? I rode my bike up that thing. So, and it's 7.6 miles long, is an average incline of 12 degrees. The last 50 yards are 20 degrees, which is a horrible thing to do to somebody after 7.5 miles.
So, I'm a Tour de France nerd.
Yeah.
That is like the most extreme grade that you can get. And it literally, the best riders in the world can barely even move the bike up.
Yeah. So, I made it all the way up to that last 50 yards.
Wow.
And my friend Gordon, who had done this three times, was like there, and he was like there to bring me down because you're not allowed to ride you back down. But he was there also because he's my friend. He did it three times, and he was cheering me on. And there's this point just before you get to the end where you ride around this big rock, and he was there at the rock cheering me on. I turned around, and all of the other riders who had made it up there, and since I was, you know, 52 years old, it was most of them, were along there cheering me on. I'm like, I'm going to make it. And I felt this rush of strength. And I got to that last 50 yards, and it was a sharp left-hand turn, then 22 degrees up. And I'm get up there, and I get about 5 miles up, and I just start to drift off to the left. And I was like, I'm not going to make it. And that's when I saw out of the corner of my eye, my friend Gordon detached. He's like 6'4" and blonde ponytailed guy, come up, grab the back of my bike and start running me up the hill, up that mountain. And with him and me pedaling, I made it to the top of the mountain. 2 days later, I said to him, you know, thanks for the push. And he said, what do you mean? I said, you came out and you helped me get up the mountain. And he said, he looked at me kind of weird. And he said, I never touched you. And he's, you know, my friend Gordon is an atheist and an empiricist, and he doesn't say stuff like that.
But has a good sense of humor, I'm sure. No?
Well, and there's a picture. I don't have a lot of pictures, but there's
I'm
a
always
picture
looking for the angle, Hannah.
Yeah, I know, everyone. I was too, and I looked.
You're very good at your job, Evan.
I saw a picture of me at that point, and there was nobody around me, so I don't know. I don't know why.
Something was pushing you up that hill.
Something was pushing me up that hill.
You don't think it was the incredible fire in your legs to finish the job?
No, I think it was Kate Bush, quite frankly.
So
a little Stranger Things reference for you right there.
Suddenly, I believe.
See, that's
running
what it took for you,
hill,
Anna.
That's running up that hill. So,
yeah, that had to be a little creepy when your friend's saying, yeah, I wasn't there.
Yeah, this is probably, you know, I don't want to talk too much about it because the next show that I'm thinking about writing is called Mounting Washington, and it's about that adventure. And so I don't want to give too much away on that one. But, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So you're a believer?
I don't think so. I try very hard not to, but, you know, just like something.
Sometimes makes you wonder.
Yeah, it's like, you know, being transgender. You know, no matter what the other people say, I exist whether they believe in me or not.
Don't make me laugh at that, Penny. Come on.
You got to laugh sometimes.
Hannah.
I'm a transgender woman who works in Greece, New York. There is nothing in the world spookier than that. Now I'm done.
Hannah.
I can't top that.
I know you really can't. Really, that's
few that, people
that's
can.
The show. Have a nice afternoon, everybody. So I know we talked a little bit about this last year, but tell people why ghosts aren't real.
I can't do that.
I know,
I'm
kidding.
It.
I know. Tell people why you think there is such a tradition of not only belief in the supernatural, but similar stories across cultures.
Yeah, that's a big question. But, I mean, basically, people experience things that they can't explain. And that's kind of the end of the sentence. And I don't think it gets a whole lot more, I mean, we can complicate it, but stuff is hard. Life is hard. It's literally inexplicable. So people believe in ghosts and the paranormal for the same reason that they believe in religion and higher powers, you know? And, you know, I can't condemn people who believe any of the above, you know? We want to explain things. We are deeply anxious about lots of stuff. And I think, you know, I'm not a non-believer, so I don't want anyone to believe that I am. But when I say this, you know, I guess take it with a grain of salt. I think that lots of paranormal experiences, stuff that other people are going to work really hard to debunk, is basically a manifestation of lots of hand-wringing and anxiety about something. You know, maybe especially in Rochester, we might feel some anxiety about the turning of the season, right? We're staring down 6 months of gray, and we lose this beautiful sun that we happen to have today, and we lose the lilacs and our beautiful neighborhood walks and yada, yada, yada. Stuff is going to get hard, and we need to pin that on something. We need to be able to explain those creepy shapes in the bushes that we don't want to acknowledge, or, you know, the fact that we're going to be holed up in our homes for the next however many months. We need something to pin that on. And I think these stories in all cultures kind of fill that gap for us. They give us something to explain what we don't have the tools for otherwise.
So I think of a story like The Lady in White, which I want to talk about The Lady in White for a second. What you told us last year is that's a story that actually exists across a lot of different cultures.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lady in white in a lot of different sort of genres and places geographically, which says to me, if I want to be the skeptic, I'm like, see, everybody's got one of those, not real. You got a lady in white. But if I want to be the believer, I go, look at the commonality. Look at the commonality of experience.
Yeah.
But there is a lady in white in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
There? And so what does that say to you, I guess?
Well, this is the power of different stories like this and kind of folk culture in general. It points out that we have many, many things in common when we are quick to assume that we don't. So we were talking about this before the show, too. All these different cultures have very similar stories. La Llorona example. You know, there are Japanese examples. I'm not going to go through the list. It would be very boring. But they're all over the place, you know, and it's roughly the same thing. There's a woman who wears white. She might have lost a child at some point. She's probably weeping. She might be near a body of water. There are all these different variables that happen in different versions of these stories. But there are symbolic meanings that we can kind of look at despite all the different origins. You know, a mourning mother, for example, that is universally tragic, right? And something that, you know, this is one of those things that we want to be able to explain. We want to be able to explain that horrible loss.
Yeah.
that we all, we probably aren't going to experience, but we know something about kind of universally. We want to explain the creepy body of water. We want to explain the creepy ruins at the park that we don't know about, et cetera. The white dress, you know, can symbolize purity and kind of this kind of, again, depending on the context, something virginal. You know, it completely depends on the individual story. But there are, as you've pointed out, kind of unifying, universally, you know, kind of recurring tropes.
Well, in our community, can you give us a little taste of the lady in white, Miriam?
Absolutely. It's one of the very first ghost stories I ever heard. And she appears around Durand Eastman Park and along Lake Ontario in Irondequoit. She was a mother who had a daughter whose daughter was stalked by a wealthy man. And one night her daughter disappears and nobody will help her. It's very universal where the men ran everything. They were the investigators. They were the sheriff. They were the people in charge. And when she suspects that it's a pillar of the community, a man with power and influence, she's told to calm down. She's not taken seriously. She's dismissed. He has all the power, and she has none of it. And so she tries to do what she can with what little power she has to get her daughter back. And like Hannah was saying, you know, I think that some ghost stories are cautionary tales, you know, to watch out for your children, watch out for people that have power and influence over you and your family. Be careful where you tread. So some of them are cautionary tales. Some of them are tales to tell you to keep in your lane. Some of the stories that I will tell between October the 12th and the 15th at the Muck Theater, 7:30 start, have to do with class and the ghost of Pete Nicosia, who was a worker at the Rush Reeves Library, and the difference between him, an immigrant working carrying hobs of cement on his shoulders 150 feet up into the air, versus the wealthy young men who attended school at the same time, the difference in privilege and how that was treated. When you look at people who are daredevils, like Sam Patch, who jumped off our Genesee Falls to his death, and then you look at what happened to that extreme skier yesterday, the 49-year-old woman who fell off the side of the mountain, and because she did this extreme skiing, or people that are extreme rock climbers on their own and they fall to their death. I mean, it's kind of stories that are happened in the 1800s. They happened 200 years ago, but it's about hubris. It's about lack of power. It's about sexism. It's about not valuing the worker or the immigrant. And these stories of people who lived in our community and died in our community are still stories that resonate today. And I'm hoping that people will come and listen to them and understand that the more things change, the more they stay the same. And it's time to keep our eyes open for the ghosts that are here around us and the ghosts that exist in the netherworld.
You know what's a perfect example of the more things change, the more things stay the same? So the lady in white in the Rochester story was condescendingly told by the males in power to calm down, right? Yeah, that's never worked. Condescendingly telling someone to calm down when they are in distress, that's a tale as old as time.
It's a good way to get somebody to talk about you on the radio 100 years later.
Yeah, so I will sooner believe in ghosts than I believe that will work. I do want to take a call from Gloria. Let's see here. Is this Gloria? Gloria in Canandaigua on the phone. Hi, Gloria. Go ahead.
Hi. I have had a couple of experiences with people who are not in their body, but I'll tell you one of them. This was when my husband and I, we're 77 years old, but when my husband and I were first married, we were living in New Mexico, and we flew up to Ohio where his mother lived, and ended up staying with his mother at her sister's house because it was right there. It was snowing very hard. And she said, why don't you stay here tonight? It's really, it's too lousy out to keep driving off to, you know, his mother's house, my husband's mother's house. So we did. And she, his aunt, whom I just loved, you know, she said we could sleep in her bed. That was very nice. We had been married maybe two years. I can't remember. And during the night, I woke up and saw, and clearly he was a spirit. I could see through him. There was a man standing there. And in some way, he let me know why he was there. He said, I just want to know who's sleeping in my bed. So anyway, in the morning, I told his aunt and my husband's mother about, you know, seeing this man in the night. And his aunt said, I knew he was around here. He had died. This was her husband who had died probably a year before, something like that. And
did you say anything? I'm trying to think of, you know, what I would say.
Did I talk to him?
Yeah.
No, I was like, I listened, and I don't know how I was able to go back to sleep, but we slept there a couple other nights, and I could not sleep. After that, I thought, please don't come back here again.
Yeah, I mean, he could have just checked your ID. He didn't have to wake you up. you know, I don't know what I would say. You know, hello, you know, I'm Evan. Where are you from originally? I don't know what else I would say.
I was half awake, you have to remember. I wasn't, like, real conscious, but I was conscious enough to see this being standing there looking, particularly me. I think my husband was sound asleep.
Hannah thinks you were dreaming and thought you were awake.
No, I didn't say
that. Oh, you
that.
Didn't say that? That's what I was thinking.
No, I had never seen him. When I described him to Steve's aunt, she said, yes, that's, you know, that was her husband.
Wow.
I had never seen him before. I had never met him before.
She That's better cool. not bring a boyfriend home.
Yeah. Gloria, before I let you go, though, I mean, that was it? That's the one appearance and that was all?
It's
no,
a pretty good one.
No, I've had there, you know, younger. I can tell you another one that was just when I was young with my sister and friends, and we decided to hold hands and around a table at my parents' house, and one of the young girls there was afraid she was pregnant, and we decided we would ask the spirits, was she or wasn't she? And so we sat there holding hands, and I did not turn my head. I can tell you this for sure. I saw behind me, behind into the rest of the kitchen, a spirit coming up, and actually came up behind the girl who was next to me. And at that point, that girl slumped down on the table. Hmm. That did it for me.
Wow. Well, Gloria, I appreciate the stories. And, you know, that leads me to wonder for the believer in the room, Miriam, especially, is, you know, you bumped into this party and, you know, you were kind of the buzzkill for the ghost that you bumped into. We've got Gloria, who's got a ghost who's wondering who's sleeping in her bed here. A lot of the stories about spirits are different in terms of what their intent is. Are they trapped here? Do they need to resolve some issue? I don't necessarily think that there's much consistency, and I wonder what you make of why spirits may exist here.
I believe in the first law of thermodynamics, which is that energy never goes away. It just changes form.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that when people die, obviously our bodies decay and go into the earth and help flowers and trees and things grow. But there's also that life force, that little bit of spark that animates
us. Look at you bringing science or pseudoscience, whatever it is.
No, the first law of thermodynamics
that's a real scientific principle. I like that.
And so, you know, there's a spark. There's something that that's divine, that's magical, that we cannot quantify. But it's energy.
Yeah.
And so it has to go on somewhere and somehow. Where it goes and what it inhabits, we don't know. But sometimes,
or why?
Yeah, sometimes people have a sudden death and they don't really comprehend that. That consciousness just becomes disembodied from the physical form. Sometimes people do know that they've passed on, but they feel like they have to give a message, or they're loath to leave familiarity or people that they love, so they stay close to physical places. And sometimes the spirit will pass on into another dimension, another realm. So, what we know about the physical world is minuscule. There is so much that science needs to tell us and look for and explain. There's more in this world, Horatio, than you and I will ever know.
I like it.
And so that's my belief, the first law of thermodynamics.
Penny, does that convince you? What do you think? Where's that spirit going?
I think sometimes it's like, when do people ever do what they're supposed to? I mean, you know that there's always going to be someone who's just going to be contrary. It's like, I'm going there. No, I'm not. I'm staying right here. Thank you very much. You know, something is connecting them to this world. Some unfinished business, unfinished desire, something longing, something emotional, love or revenge, whatever it is. If they're here, it's because they feel like they have a reason to be here. I'm not going to figure out what it was. I'm not like the Sixth Sense kid. I can't figure out why they're here. I guess they happen to be here.
What would you ask, Hannah, if someone came to you and said, "I just want to see you sleeping in my bed"?
Are you a bear? Am I in the wrong place?
Yeah, right.
You want my porridge?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd whip out my recorder, obviously, and have a whole conversation. I'm totally open-minded. I am completely on board with both what Miriam and Penny have said. I think in addition to energy, I think memory is a powerful thing. Part of me finds it very hard to believe that a person lives as long as they do, even if it's a short life, you know. They just leave and that's that. You know, I find that a little hard to believe. There has to be more than that. And even if it is just memory, families and loved ones and communities, you know, I think probably do have the power to conjure a person back into existence in some way. Bits and pieces, the woman you spoke about, you shared the party story. Gloria shared the wonderful kind of man over the bed story. You know,
that's also kind of a common one.
It is. Absolutely. People appearing in bed or near beds. Yeah. But, even if you haven't seen these people, haven't seen the party, we are familiar with stories that people have told about these kinds of things. Right. And who am I to question what people patch together or experience? You know, I'm just here to listen. So I'm not going to debate any of that.
Well, as we go to break, we'll come right back, take some more of your feedback. We're getting ready for a really fun event coming up October 12th through the 15th at the Muck. The Multi-Use Community Cultural Center, and that is Rochester Ghost Stories. 7:30 p.m. each of those nights, so mark your calendar and go out for a good time of ghost stories. Penny is directing. Miriam is the one-woman show telling these stories. $10 in advance for tickets that you can get through the Muck, or $12 at the door if it's not sold out here. And, has it ever occurred to you that the reason things have been so strange lately is maybe the dead have been rising from the grave? We're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, Monroe County has a climate action plan. What's in it? What does it ask of us? We'll explore it. In our second hour, 40 years after the debut of a show called Cheers, are there bars anymore where everybody knows your name? We'll talk about the legacy of that show and what's changed in our society Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Dogs and cats living together and the mass hysteria of ghosts as we talk about Rochester ghost stories with our guest this hour. Hannah Davis, founding director of Flower City Folk and professor of practice in RIT's School of Individualized Study. Penny Sterling is a storyteller, video professional, and directing the upcoming Rochester Ghost Story starring Miriam Zinter. That is coming up October 12th through the 15th at the MUC, the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center on Atlantic. Let me get back to your calls. This is Howard in Penyan, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio. Hi, Howard. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Good. Very good.
Okay. This story took place about 25 years ago. We were living in Rochester at the time, and our daughter was in Virginia about to have a baby, and she died during delivery. My wife was with her at the time. Mm. And when I came back from the funeral, I was alone in our house a week after she died. And I'm lying in bed, and I hear somebody choking in the hallway. And I call out her name, and I get no answer. And I look in the mirror, and I can see the door reflected in the mirror, and there is a very ghostly figure standing in the doorway just looking at me. It suddenly flashed back that the year that Margie was born, we had an apartment, and we had moved into a new apartment, and I used to call it our haunted apartment because I'd be sitting in the living room alone watching television, and I would see this dark figure standing in the doorway looking at me. And I realized that the first one was Margie going back to where she was born, and the second one was Margie coming back to say goodbye to me. Mm. When I picked up my wife at the airport, I said, what kind of sound did Margie make when she was dying? She said, well, I can't make that sound. So I made the sound I heard in the hallway. And Nancy said, how did you know? I said, Margie was home. She came to say goodbye to me.
Wow, Howard. How do you process that? I mean, how did that sort of hit you emotionally?
Well, I have never believed in an afterlife. And I went into therapy after she died. And the therapist said to me, you don't believe in an afterlife, right? I said, right. She said, your daughter came back to see you after she died, right? I said, right. She says, how do you work that out? I said, it's not easy. It's not easy.
But I imagine quite beautiful and important for you.
Oh, it was very important for me. I got to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And I told the therapist, physical therapist once about it, and she was somebody who worked with people who were dying, and she says, you ought to publish this in, oh, I forgot what it's called, Something Friends. So it's a magazine for people who have lost children, Compassionate Friends, and they published it immediately.
Wow.
So I felt maybe it did it good for somebody else.
Howard, I am really grateful for you telling the story, and I can tell you there's people behind the glass, we're moved to tears over this. Thank you for this.
Thank you.
Thanks for telling that story, Howard. You
know
what? For all the people who note that I am the resident skeptic on this panel, I believe Howard 100%. I don't know what he experienced or saw, but I believe him. And that is his experience. And that is valuable in its own way and powerful in its own way. Howard said himself, doesn't believe in the afterlife, but knows what he experienced.
That's interesting.
I had
a similar, well, I didn't have the similar, my father died of a heart attack in 1977, and 4 months later, my mother's brother, Roy, also had a heart attack, but he survived, and when he came out of the, and when he came out and was able to talk, he called my mother and said, when he was like apparently dead for like a minute or two before they got his heart started again, he said, I saw Art. That was my dad. I saw Art and he wanted you to know that he's okay. And, he believed that when he was there, he actually had a connection, no pun intended, with my father in the afterlife.
I mean, I don't know that we need an explanation, do we there, Miriam? I mean, those powerful connections that people feel, who knows what drives or creates them, but who are we to say that they aren't real, right?
They're real. They're real. You had it happen to you, and you shared your history of what happened to you.
Yeah.
You know, believe people when they tell you what happened. There's nothing to be gained from that.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. No need to debunk.
Right. Yeah. Wasn't that beautiful from Howard?
Yeah,
that
was lovely.
And so, Howard, let me now read an email from Manny, who, I mean, this is maybe the deeply cynical side of things, but I have a thought on this because I'm, you know, the curmudgeonly skeptic here. Manny says, with respect to ghosts and to your guests who say they have seen ghosts, I have a genuine question. Why is the first response to such an event that this must be paranormal and not that I might be having a hallucination or I'm experiencing an event of momentary psychosis, an event precipitated by a combination of my genetics, my life experiences, and my current brain chemistry? That is from Manny. Manny, to me, even though I would love to continue to be the curmudgeon, I view this sort of similarly as I think about placebo. So if you had a response to acupuncture, is it the response of what the physical, is the acupuncture doing something, or does your brain assume it is? And do you have like a placebo response? What about medicine that you take? Is it the actual medicine doing the work? Is your brain assuming that the work is going to get done and it creates the conditions for that? I don't know, but I'm not sure it matters much. And I'm not sure someone like, whether it's Howard or anybody, or you.
Well, Manny, did you even listen to my story?
I know.
First thought was I left the TV on in my house. Yeah. My first thought was that my cat stepped on the remote and turned the TV on. My first thought wasn't, ooh, I'm listening to a ghostly party on the other side of that door. My first thought was my RG&E bill's going to be up a little bit because I left the TV running all day long. That was my first thought. When they put the key in the door and it opened and the sound died in an instant, then no, I'm coming from work. I had not had a single drink. As a matter of fact, I didn't drink at all at the time. I've never used drugs.
Were you on an acid flashback?
I was not on an acid flashback.
I say that because Patrick just emailed to say, I typically see figures after I'm on an acid binge.
Never done acid.
Out of the corner of my eye, working in yards or in dimly lit places, psychedelics have a certain mystique. But that wasn't you.
No. Psychedelics, I don't know about acid, but I have heard from people who use psilocybin mushrooms that it is a connection to the mycelium, which is the, you know, mushrooms are the largest and oldest living organism on the planet. And so utilizing psilocybin mushrooms connects you to that network. But I would not have any personal experience with that.
Yeah, that is ancient Indian. That has been going on for generations, for thousands of years. That's what that was used for, as a ritual. In indigenous cultures, yes.
Yeah.
It's true. I have a thought for Manny. So with all due respect, Manny, I don't want to rag on you too hard. But this thought process that you're going through is in itself part of traditional narratives revolving around ghosts. And in narrative studies, people who work on ghost stories refer to them as memorots, which is a particular kind of category of stories. We don't call them ghost stories. We call them memorots. These are stories that are supernatural in nature. There's something spooky happening, ghosts or not. But the real defining characteristic of the story is that the person who's sharing the story goes through this kind of thought process. Am I insane? Am I having a side effect? Did I leave it on the TV? There's this critical kind of reflection on their own actions. And like I said, that is in itself a part of this traditional narrative, like categorically, structurally part of this story, in the same way that Once Upon a Time or They Lived Happily Ever After might be. You know, absolutely. I think what Miriam has shared is very true. And there are very few people who I've heard ghost stories from who are like, oh, yeah, I saw a ghost. You know, it is what it is, you know, without that kind of reflection. So, you know, that is integral to this.
And additionally, the non-believer is traditionally the first one to die in the story. So Manny.
That too.
Penny.
Light some sage, Manny, is all I'm trying to say. And on top of that, I
cannot endorse that, Manny. Go ahead, Ben.
On the other hand, I mean, also, I'm not sure there is a psychosis strong enough to push a 170-pound person on a bicycle up a 22-degree hill. I mean, I had no strength. I was gassed, and I still made it to the top. So, yeah.
Okay. Well.
So, ghost of Schwarzenegger's grandfather, or maybe. I don't know.
Supernatural assist.
Super strong supernatural. Super duper natural.
No, I mean, but Manny, let me also say that I understand the spirit of your email better if we're talking about, say, psychics. So people go to ostensible psychics and almost never, so, or to a medium who's communicating with the dead. You almost never hear a medium say, yes, I'm talking to your late grandmother. And, you know, she's got a message for you. She's really disappointed in you. That's almost never what you, it's always like, they're doing great. They're proud of you. Because it's very profitable for people to feel like I want positive messages, and you're going to come back and you're going to send people back if you get something positive. There's been a lot of, you know, proven scams. However, are there people who can communicate with the dead like that? Come on, that's a jump for me, Marianne, but you really think?
I don't know about that.
Yeah?
I don't know about that. I think that there are a lot of people that are out there scamming and claiming. They're like, oh, does anybody know anybody named John? Mm. You know, so,
like
you know,
really
if they
name.
Come back and they're like, your grandma hid the pearls in the basement in a box above the, then I'd be like, wow. But, you know, I don't know about people that charge other people money. To give them messages. I don't know if they're true. I don't know if they're not true. All I can tell you is from my personal experience, I don't believe that people actually fully leave. I think that mm-hmm. some people stay. I'm not here to talk about mediums.
And on the other side of the medium thing for me, though, is you have to understand what people are asking you when they're asking you a question. So if someone asks you, do you like this outfit on me? They are either asking you, tell me if it doesn't look good, don't let me go out in public looking silly, and I need to know, or I want to be affirmed and I just need something loving. And you gotta know what you're being asked. It's not always the same thing. Mm-hmm. So when you go to a medium, you might be saying, I want to know exactly, you can talk to the dead, I totally believe it, and give it to me straight. Or you might be saying, look, we both know that you're not talking to the dead, but I need some comfort here, give it to me. And that's also, I think that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that's okay.
That's a valid service.
Okay.
And if they really were psychic, they would be calling me. It's like, yeah. Okay.
That's a really good point.
You got that? Okay, here's my credit card.
That is really good.
Take what you want.
I
have questions for Dad, you know?
I like that. In our last few minutes here, I just want to remind you, Rochester Ghost Stories is coming your way October 12th through the 15th, 7:30 p.m. performances. From Miriam Zinter, directed by Penny Sterling. It's at the MUC, the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center. That's on Atlantic Avenue. It's a really cool space if you've not been there. And Miriam, any other stories that you want to hint at or tease that you're going to be talking about here?
No, for those who don't know who the Fox sisters are, the storyteller will be me as Kate Fox, and I'll let you know a little bit about Rochester's first spiritualists who started a religious movement. And then just going on with at least 3 ghost stories. Depends on, we might add another one, but we'll see. Yeah. It should be a fun night.
Yeah. It's going to be creepy and kooky, mysterious and ooky. It's going to be altogether
they're creepy
spooky.
And they're kooky.
You know, everybody. Now it's going to be in your heads, listeners.
Thanks. I don't think we have the rights to that. We have to edit that out for the rebroadcast.
What rights to what? I was just telling
just
you.
Random
you were just random words. Yeah.
Just riffing. How long is the show, by the way, for those who are planning?
One hour
Earth time.
1 hour Earth time. So
yes.
7:30, 8:30. Enough time to go out to dinner, have a drink afterward. Should be a really, really fun time. And I didn't ask Hannah this. I mean, we've been talking to Hannah about sort of the functional aspects of storytelling. But people don't just do it when they're trying to get answers. They do it for the fun of it, as Penny's been
totally.
Saying. Why do you think that we delight so much in this?
Human experience. We all have things to kind of listen to and empathize about, you know, and certain kind of seasonal factors influence what we want to take in. So in the same way that we might want to listen to, I don't know, some Brad Paisley song in July because we're going to a barbecue, we might want to hear...
Or yacht rock,
yeah. I shouldn't out myself as an occasional country listener, but, you know, we kind of crave the stuff that feels right and, you know, in autumn, we want spooky stories because that's what we are accustomed to and what we kind of look forward to. So, you know, we kind of delight in these things that appeal to us accordingly.
You know, ghost stories are the pumpkin spice of legends. Evan.
That's totally true. That's totally true. And there's nothing wrong with them or PSLs.
I know. You guys have actually convinced me. I've come so far in these the last couple of years of having this conversation. I really have softened. I think there is something really human and beautiful about a lot of this. You know who's on tour, by the way, now as a country fan? The ghost of Garth Brooks is out on tour.
Nice.
I think it's actually the real Garth Brooks.
Might be. I don't know. Yeah. I'll Google it.
I think he's still playing.
I think he is.
I hope we've had some fun here. A whole separate conversation is I still don't get why people like horror movies. That's a different...
I don't understand why people like pumpkin spice thing, myself, right? So, you know, it's like...
That's like your... Yeah,
yeah, that's my thing.
Oh, man. What did I miss, Megan Mack? Oh, what a... There's too many pages. There's too many pages in front of me. She's telling me there's a
or
note
maybe
that you threw
some
in there. Why do we like horror
spirit
series?
Rearranged?
Oh, why
that?
Do we like to be scared? That kind of a thing. I guess some people like to be scared. I don't like to see people stabbing people. I don't get that. But there's a new Halloween movie coming out next month because of course there is. There's millions of dollars.
There's the whole better you than me or better them than me.
Somebody explained that one time. It's like I get to watch other people get slaughtered and I know that it's all fake and I get to go to bed peacefully at night. That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, you just answered your own question.
And that doesn't work for me.
Nor
me.
I'm with you. I'm completely with you. No.
I do not need it. Anyway, go see this wonderful show. And I know it's going to be wonderful because the people involved are so much fun. And they're going to bring you Rochester Ghost Stories October 12th through the 15th at the Muck. I can't endorse it officially. I can only endorse people's membership in WXXI. But there you go. Have so much fun, Miriam Center. Miriam is playing Kate Fox, bringing you the ghost stories. Thank you for coming on, by the way.
Always a pleasure.
I hope you bump into a really cool party and this time they let you hang out.
Absolutely.
Penny Sterling, I hope the next time that you've got a big race,
you
actually get to see whoever is taking you to the top.
Oh, or maybe I can just do it by myself this time.
Oh, well, yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have fun with your show.
Thank you.
And Hannah, thank you for the expertise and the thoughts as always.
Anytime.
Great fun. From all of us at Connections, I should have done this like The Simpsons where you give us spooky names, but I don't have it. I just have Miles and Megan and MRA and Evan saying thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow or maybe not. I don't know. It'll be spooky.